Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. It almost looks like a balloon inside the body, but its presence can be life-threatening, a sign that a critical blood vessel is in danger. An aneurysm is a thinning of the wall of an artery, which leads to a widening, inflation, or balloon-like bulge. Depending on where it is and when it ruptures, the results can be fatal, particularly in the brain. According to the Brain Aneurysm Foundation, an estimated 6 million people in the U.S. have an unruptured brain aneurysm. That's 1 in 50 people. Annually in the U.S., 30,000 people suffer a brain aneurysm rupture, which translates to 1 every 18 minutes.
What are the symptoms of a ruptured aneurysm? Can they be spotted beforehand? Who's at risk? And how can we reduce risk? And what's the current treatment? Here to explain the basics of aneurysm is Dr. Robert Singer, a neurovascular surgeon at Eastern Maine Medical Center, where he's also a coordinator of the Neuroscience Institute. He's a member of the Medical Advisory Board of the Brain Aneurysm Foundation.
Welcome to Take Care, Dr. Singer. Thank you for coming on our show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
We gave a loosey-goosey description of an aneurysm, but you are the professional. So how can you describe the aneurysm a little more fully so that our audience understands the seriousness of it?
Certainly, and I would say that your description was really very good. When I talk to patients about brain aneurysms, oftentimes they have a brain aneurysm that's not ruptured. It's incidentally found. And I describe it as a thinning of the blood vessel, much like a bleb on a tire. And with wear and tear and fluctuations in blood pressure and histories of smoking and things like that, that bleb can stretch, open, and burst. And when that happens, patients bleed. And it can be very, very serious. About 40% of patients that have ruptured brain aneurysms die within 3 months of the rupture. So it's a very bad actor.
So when you say you find it incidentally, this person might have had a concussion or some other type of X-ray or MRI to look at one thing, and then the doctor pulls them aside and says, well, you don't have a concussion, but I have bad news. I see an aneurysm. So this person had no symptoms. So until it ruptures, you could be living with an aneurysm, and that seems kind of scary.
That's correct. That's exactly how I meet most of my patients. The patient will go to see their physician, primary physician, internist, whoever, with nonspecific symptoms, sometimes dizziness, sometimes persistent headache, sometimes just a sinus infection. And because we have access to CTs and MRIs so readily anymore, those scans are obtained and the aneurysms are oftentimes identified incidentally. And you're right, patients definitely are concerned and want to get into a specialist as quickly as possible. Some aneurysms can present with symptoms like a dilated pupil or occasionally some blurred or double vision. Things like that can occur, but most often with an unruptured aneurysm, a patient has no symptoms whatsoever.
Does that person need immediate surgery, or are there other ways to manage or reduce the size of the aneurysm?
We look at a lot of different factors when determining what a patient needs for treatment. You know, the things like patient's age, their medical history, the size and location of the aneurysm, all of those things are considered when we're giving advice as to what should be done. A very, very small aneurysm, oftentimes we will do very little to treat, and we may just monitor with some imaging over time. A larger aneurysm that's in the 7 millimeter range, we will oftentimes, if the patient is healthy and fit and young and within reason, we will talk about treatment options. And if you'd like to talk about that, we certainly can do that as well.
Before we get to that, where in the body is an aneurysm most likely to occur, and what causes one?
Well, again, an aneurysm occurs because of degeneration of the blood vessel wall, and there are many factors that can determine why the blood vessel degenerates. Some people just have a predisposition for arterial degeneration that can form an aneurysm. Aneurysms are seen throughout the body. Specific places that are commonly seen are the aorta, the large vessel off of the heart. That's a common location for an aneurysm. We can see aneurysms on some of the large tributary arteries like the renal, the kidney arteries. Those can form aneurysms. And in my specialty, I see brain aneurysms or aneurysms in the cerebral circulation. Those are the common areas. And again, they usually are related to degeneration of the arterial wall, either because of some factor that the patient can control or sometimes people just have a genetic predisposition to arterial degeneration.
Tell us, what are some of the more common treatments for an aneurysm?
Up until about 1995, 1996, when a patient had an aneurysm that needed to be treated, they would go to the operating room for a traditional craniotomy, which is when we make an incision on the scalp and remove a plate of bone and then get under the microscope and dissect and place a clip across the base of the aneurysm. And while we still do that, in around 1995, endovascular approaches began to emerge, and those are approaches where we go in through the blood vessel system. So instead of being on the outside of the blood vessel to repair the problem, we actually go in through the femoral artery commonly and track catheters up into the region of the aneurysm for treatment. And those treatments can be anything from packing small platinum coils into the aneurysm so blood can no longer flow into it, or placing stents across the base of the aneurysm to divert flow away from the aneurysm so it clots off on its own. So over the last 20 years or so, there's been a dramatic evolution in the catheter-based approaches to aneurysms, and that really is the primary way most aneurysms are treated. There are some situations where we still have to operate, but certainly a catheter-based approach is preferred by many. There's no incision, no bad haircut, and no brain retraction. So we can treat with a catheter and get things taken care of with just a simple Band-Aid after we're done.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And our guest today on the topic of aneurysm is Dr. Robert Singer. He's a neurovascular surgeon at Eastern Maine Medical Center, where he's also coordinator of the Neuroscience Institute. Dr. Singer, earlier you mentioned that in some cases, developing an aneurysm, it may be due to factors that can be controlled. So who is most likely at risk for developing an aneurysm, and what are these factors?
We know clearly that smoking contributes to progression of aneurysm and development of aneurysms. So smoking is a controllable risk factor, and we see a good number of patients with ruptured and unruptured aneurysms that are smokers. The other thing is blood pressure. We know patients that have high blood pressure are more at risk for rupture of aneurysms as well, and that's something that is controllable. Drug use, particularly cocaine, I think those are the controllable things that we see in patients that contribute to aneurysm development and rupture. There are some uncontrolled things. Again, we mentioned earlier some syndromes that a patient can't control, and therefore, you know, we need to screen those folks and keep an eye on them.
If aneurysm is a degeneration of the blood vessel wall, how early can it appear? Does it appear in childhood?
There are some childhood aneurysms that we see, and those patients typically have some sort of collagen vascular phenomenon that contributes to the development of an aneurysm. The vast majority of aneurysms that we see are going to be from about 40 years on. So, and I think that lends credence to the idea that this is a degenerative process over time. So we tend to see people that are in their 40s and upward with brain aneurysms, but pediatric aneurysms do occur. And I think that the reason for that is different than what we see in the adult population.
Dr. Robert Singer is a neurovascular surgeon at Eastern Maine Medical Center, where he's also coordinator of the Neuroscience Institute, as well as a member of the Medical Advisory Board of the Brain Aneurysm Foundation. Thank you so much for your time today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for talking about this. It's important, and we clearly have options for treatment here. It's a horrible disease when a rupture occurs, and I really appreciate you taking the effort and time to talk about it.